Welcome to Speak in Flow, the podcast that helps leaders like you unlock the power of your voice, achieve maximum potential and flow through exceptional communication. I'm your host, Melinda Lee, and I am passionate about helping company leaders and their teams master public speaking, pitching with impact, and stepping into their full leadership potential. Thanks for tuning in to the Speak in Flow podcast, which is the top 10% of podcasts worldwide. When you stick around until the end, I have an exclusive gift just for listeners only, something that will immediately help you and your team up-level your communication. Let's dive in. Hello, dear listeners. Thanks for joining the Speak in Flow podcast, where we dive into unique experiences and strategies to help you and your team maximize their potential and flow, even in high-stakes situations. Today, I have an amazing, innovative, on the front line of technology and AI. She's a media and technology strategist, executive producer. She's a VP and board of directors of XR Guild, as well as CEO of a reality craft, Evo Haining. Hi, Evo.
Hi, Melinda. Great to be with you.
I'm so excited about our conversation today because it's juicy, it's fun and exciting. So let's just launch off. You've been in the technology producing world, AI world for many years now. So what are you seeing that's exciting between AI, technology, and communication today?
Well, we've seen an amazing convergence of the capacities of our tools. If you think of AI and broadly our digital tools as being a toolkit, that toolkit has expanded to be thousands of interesting tools that can be applied to any challenge. So I work on things like rebuilding and concept design after disasters. So I'm excited to see where things like a Gaussian splat and a scan of a space can meet the generative and the procedural AI to come up with a concept for a space that can be built quickly. So if you imagine that we have tens of thousands of people who've lost their homes to hurricanes and fires just in the US this year, there is a huge need for being able to take our mobile phones out, do a site plan, add our concept design works and our architectural works, and get those through to permits fast. So this is where AI tools are meeting things like BIM, our building and infrastructure tools, so that we can get things done together quickly and hopefully effectively.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And such a huge need. And so what do you think will be the struggles to getting to what you just described efficiently and effectively?
Well, there's quite a few current struggles. I tend to be an early researcher at the edges of what these technologies can do. So what we're seeing right now are workflow challenges and bringing all of these elements together. And then we have the challenges of publishing that in a way that the permit office and county hall is going to be able to say yes to it quickly, right? So that's just one workflow. That's for rebuilding and resilience after disaster. But there are infinite use cases out there for being able to rapidly do concept design for storytelling and then build that world so that people can participate in it, whether that's a game world or a story world or making a film like the movie Flow that was using Blender as a digital tool. So I'm excited to see the tools converging, and I'm excited to see what small, relatively independent teams can do with those tools in order to enhance and enable their own creative process.
And what you've seen, like you mentioned, the beautiful part of this is like imagining things, seeing a space, and then using these tools to bring it to life. What are the things that are challenging and about doing that? The struggles about doing that.
Well, currently the crop of generative media tools is going to be based on existing models of the world, and those analyses are incomplete. So while we have a number of teams going out there and volumetrically scanning our cities and bringing together data so that we have better models, for now, if I type in, imagine a seaport, that seaport might not look anything like the seaport that's in my mind. And so we are seeing a refinement in especially 3D world building process and being able to take a conceptual 3D design and fill it out using both generative or procedural methods, right? That is closing the gap. That is making it simpler and easier to go from my house burnt down to my house is now rebuilt, right? Which is currently sometimes a 4 or 5 year process. If we look at, for example, Paradise, California, this has been almost now 5 years to get people into their homes again, right? Altadena and LA, they're only 60 days out, right? They're just now returning to their homes for the first time. So anything we can do to shrink the gap by saying, use this information, including my volumetric scan, my architectural concepts, everything I know about resiliency and fireproofing, and bring that together into a plan that's going to work for me. That is where generative tools, I think, are going. That's, and again, one use case of many, but that's a use case that we know tens of thousands of people here just in America need to be able to use today.
And are people adopting to these? Like you said, the government, the teams that are out there in the fields, like, are they taking these plans and actually are they adopting them? Are they using them?
So much of that rebuilding and resiliency path in the use of generative AI is early stage. These experiments where I work with teams in 5 different regions currently, from Africa to Maui and Hawaii, that are working on these methods and in some cases building a stakeholder-driven process so they can bring together the indigenous community, the universities, all of the local engineers to help make better decisions together. But that's, again, not about the tools. It's about understanding the tools and then building a collaborative process that allows everyone to participate.
And like you said, there's very specific language on how to do that and how to, go ahead.
I was going to say there's the essential tools, and then there's the essential language to learn. There are two pieces of this puzzle. When people are looking at, for example, how to unlock generative media for something they're trying to achieve, whether that's storytelling or concept design or research, there's understanding language and how to use it and how to clarify your language for prompt craft. And then there's understanding what tools do best and which tool is right for you. And both of those skills are essential if you're going to make the most of your generative process and not just sort of experiment with whatever someone handed you. That's also essential if you're going to be creatively leading the process instead of being led by the tool, which is what some people often fall into a trap of, which is sort of over-trusting the tool to tell you the future instead of telling the tool the future you want to create.
How do you know when you're being led by the tool versus, okay, this is what I want to create? How would I know?
If it looks like something very cool but different than what you imagined, but you find yourself going down the rabbit hole anyway. And it's a fun rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's a fun rabbit hole. But then you gotta remember, so that's a good indication.
You're like playing at that point. You're being 9-year-old exploring, and then you have to come back and say, okay, was that useful or was that play?
Interesting. I've been using some tools with my clients, Udaly, an AI speech coach AI tool, and it's I think it's great. I think it's fun. I think you get some really nice analytics from your practice, and you could do role play. And I also find that people are not as open to using it because it's something new, something different, and it's telling me something and it's not a human.
And
What
it
are your
might
thoughts
be
about that?
rubbing up against their ideas of, is this appropriate? Is this trustworthy? Is it consensual?
Right.
These are all things that
Right.
we go through in choosing whether or not any tool is right for us, any digital tool, not
Right.
just generative tools, but especially generative tools. We need to be
Right.
asking, hey, do I trust the company on the other side of this tool to use my information effectively? And in some cases, you cannot do that. So when I teach agencies or marketing professionals or anyone who is publishing, they need to be using tools that they can trust, and they also have to pass it through their legal department. So they may say, we'll stick with the Adobe Creative Suite, and anything in Adobe Creative Suite's fine, but we don't want to come over here to these other tools because we don't know what they're going to do with our assets, right? If I upload the image of my upcoming product, are they going to somehow make me more vulnerable or create a trust problem for me? And that's a huge issue, I think, for people at all stages of their career. Can I trust this tool? Can I trust the company behind this tool? Is really an important inquiry early on when you're testing.
So fascinating. And what do you think is changing? How does this change our written language and both written and verbal language?
Well, I think we're seeing people becoming more concise in some ways. An ideal prompt for many of these tools is going to be under 50 words and frequently under 25 words. And there are certain elements you need to hit, like style or description, that absolutely are going to need to be there for it to be effective. So that making language more concise is a clarification process. It's a little bit of a language dance, like jazz or like dancing, and you're finding your way over time. You're going to keep practicing at it until you find the words that work for you. But then on the other side, you're getting tons of stuff. If you're working with a large language model, I've been testing Perplexity for doing both deeper research and for analyzing research across all different types of ecosystems. And you're getting so much information there, right? But relatively little of it is actionable or things that I need to go take back to the board at XR Guild and say, here's what we need to be paying attention to. So then I have to do the critical thinking work of, is this important for us, or is this too much noise, too much information without meaning? Because a lot of these tools are going to give you lots and lots of information, very little meaning, very verbose. And that's not necessarily helping any of us get forward.
I mean, we can easily turn it around and write it up and then post it and get it out to the world again. And yeah, and it just becomes a lot of information.
And that's what some people consider slop, right? They think of it as having very little meaning because it's just adding to the noise without adding to the insight in the public.
And losing authenticity and losing possibly connection.
It probably
Especially if
loses
you're,
trust over time. This is what I've noticed, is that some people keep a strong filter away from all things AI because they're noticing that for them, it gives them a red alert that they don't trust it. And so I have to recognize that if I'm going to use AI tools, that there is a certain audience that is not going to see it or read it or pay attention to it.
They can smell it.
Yep.
And then what about verbal communication? How do you think this impacts verbal?
Well, I think we are starting to think about how we clarify language a little bit differently in the conference room. I've seen this in my Zoom meetings. They tend to be a little bit shorter, and then we go back and use our AI notes. And so we have a little bit more of a longer train of collaboration, but it's not happening inside the meeting. It's happening outside the meeting now, which is nice, actually. I prefer shorter meetings, and we kind of bang through things quickly. And the note taker's done all that work, right? So it doesn't have to be certain types of roles in the room, freeing the secretary of the board up to do
correct
something. Right. That's a really valuable role as an ombudsman or as a data manager or as someone who's making sure that our systems and security are not being compromised in some way, mm-hmm. or that we're speaking mm-hmm. about things in the right way. What mm-hmm. I've noticed is that many, especially nonprofit organizations, don't have an AI policy. And so they're mm-hmm. having to come together now and very quickly sort these things out and say, okay, we trust these tools, but not these tools. We absolutely don't want you to put our data sets into certain tools because that might compromise mm-hmm. the groups we're trying to mm-hmm. work with. That might be a data mm-hmm. privacy issue. And so this mm-hmm. is for mm-hmm. nonprofit organizations, health providers, everyone mm-hmm. who's in any sort of service with the public has to figure out, okay, what's my AI policy? And am I like just going to take my data set, upload it to the web and just hope that right. it works out okay? These are conversations right. that pretty much every group I know right now is having around the board.
Right, right. And it's going to continue to evolve, but we have to have these conversations. What are we going to do? How are we going to have, what policies are right? And yes, how do I as a person use it ethically, effectively? Wow. Yeah. I've learned so much today, and I want to close off with, can you share with the audience, what is that one leadership takeaway that you want them to remember?
Well, we have talked just a little bit about flow and about the importance of being centered in yourself, in your own creativity, in your own vision. When I'm going on stage to talk about AI, for me, that's a quick meditation process and just taking a few deep breaths. But in my creative process and in my leadership process, both, I like to take a step back, breathe, listen, and then ask a good question. Think about what everyone else in the room is probably holding on to but isn't speaking into. And then point a question in that direction, because there's a way in which you can open up everyone in the room at once just by asking the right question at the right time. But to do that, you have to be attuned to the people you're working with. So that takes a little bit of centering and being able to be very focused in yourself so that you can then be open and aware and really present with everyone around you.
That is beautiful. Especially tying this into your expertise about generative AI and discussion, can you tell us a process of similar? So you said take a pause, breathe, get centered within ourselves, and then what is the space like? Inviting what is here, and noticing what is here, and then asking the right question to move forward or to learn to. So that's just like what we do with AI or the generative
it
process.
Is.
Can you share the key tie that?
It is. Yeah. It is. It's certainly tied together in the place of inspiration, right? Yeah. So many of us are constantly tapped into various forms of inspiration, but we're very rarely putting language to it. And what generative tools invite us to do is to give it language, and then the language is going to give something form. So you can create any world you want. You don't have to be stuck with a dystopian mindset just because it's on the TV at the evening news. Mm-hmm. You can create something completely new. But to do that, you have to center in yourself and think about, well, what is the world I want to see? And how is it different from all the noise around me? And then once I give that language, that inquiry becomes the seed for a prompt that I can then take into any tool I'd like.
Beautiful. That gives me chills. I love that. So beautiful. Thank you, Ivo. And you teach classes on this. Like, can you share with the audience how to find you, more about the classes?
Sure. So I wrote a book called Prompt Craft in 2023. I'm currently working on a second book and a new edition of Prompt Craft. So Prompt Craft and Reality Craft are interactive guidebooks. I teach them both internally inside companies and organizations, as well as in public and on Zoom and you name it. So you can go to evo.ist, which is my website and channel. There you'll see some previous talks. You'll find out how to book a session and you'll see a number of different creative projects that I've done over the years to integrate different tools, technologies, and methods.
Wonderful. Reach out to Evo. This is amazing, innovative, and brings our creativity into the world. So how do you want to bring your creativity into the world? This is your opportunity.
Yeah.
So we have all your links in the show notes. Click on the links and reach out to Evo.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, Evo. And thank you so much, audience, for being here. I trust that you got your golden takeaway. And remember, anytime you have an opportunity to communicate, you have an opportunity to connect with others and inspire and make a bigger difference in the world. Until next time, I am your sister in flow. Take care. Bye. Thank you. That's a wrap on today's Speak and Flow podcast. I hope that you gained valuable insights to help you communicate with more clarity, connection, and confidence. Before you go, let me ask you this. Can your team communicate your founder story in a way that strengthens relationships and builds your company brand? If not, I've got a tool for you. Introducing, it's an AI founder story creator. This is a tool to help you craft a compelling story instantly that you can share with your team and therefore your team can share with lots of people, building your brand. Grab this tool. In addition to creating immediately your founder story, you're also going to get one-on-one coaching with me so that we can continue to refine the story so that it's in alignment with your company messaging. Click on the link in the show notes, grab it today, and until next time, keep leading with confidence and courage.